Sandy, this is a unique day in the calendar of the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
We call it Maundy Thursday in the traditional calendar, but it's the day we talk about the in-between times when Jesus is getting ready to offer himself up as a sacrifice for all mankind. And then it pivots to what we consider the New Testament. This is the work that Jesus did that was unique to him. But, you know, it's the Passover itself, the entire Passover of that week, that's truly unique. Jesus transforms all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So even the Seders that are being had thousands of years after that fact are deeply affected and informed and transformed by what Jesus did that week. And I want to talk about that today.
Okay. Explain to me, before we get into the scripture, what does Maundy Thursday mean?
The word is Maundy, M-A-U-N-D-Y, and that's a simplification of a French term from way back from Latin.
Okay.
It refers to commandments, mandate.
Okay.
So that word comes to us as a special command. This new commandment I give to you, says Jesus. Jesus turned everything on its head as far as we're concerned and gave us a new commandment. It doesn't just mean that he fulfilled all the other commandments or that he reinterpreted commandments and made them mean something new and different. It means that he's giving us something that has never appeared, really, in the moral universe up until then.
Right. So this is one of those things that from this point forward, we have
not
all of
just
this
a
tradition.
Little.
Well, we have all of this tradition that we're going to find in the book of Exodus when the children of Israel are leaving Egypt out of slavery. For thousands of years, they celebrated this. The Passover is what they called it. And so when Jesus comes along and celebrates the Passover with his disciples, he ups the ante a little bit with this new commandment.
In every way, I would say. Now, he's also completely embedded within the context of Passover. He's not saying, let's not do Passover anymore.
Right, right.
He's saying, this is what the Passover is and will be going forward, this new commandment.
Yeah.
So what he's doing is reinventing Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And not just saying, I'm like the Lamb before. He's saying, I am the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. So something really new is happening that's completely Jewish. He's doing this with Jewish people. It's in the context of a Jewish festival and celebration before it ever got to us outside the faith that was considered true. Jesus is doing something that sets within the context of his very Jewishness, something that was going to encompass all of us. And I know we don't talk about that a whole lot. We either say, oh, we go back to the Seder and do it like the Jews did at the time to capture something special, or we say, it's done with and it's all about the Lord's Supper and everything later.
Right.
It's not. It's all of that. And way more.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back, if you can. Let's read from the original prescriptions given to us by Moses when the first Passover happened.
I'm reading from Exodus 12, beginning in verse 1. The Eternal One said to Moses and Aaron while still in the land of Egypt, mark this month as the first month of all months for you, the first month of your year. Declare this message to the entire community of Israel. When the 10th day of this month arrives, every family is to select a lamb, one for each household. If there aren't enough people in the family to eat an entire lamb, then they should share it with their nearest neighbor, according to how many people are in the neighbor's family. Divide the portions of the lamb so that each person has enough to eat. And then he goes in to talk about the specifics of this lamb. Choose a one-year-old lamb without blemish, that's completely intact, has no broken bones or anything that's wrong with it. And then he says, keep the chosen lamb safe until the 14th day of the month. Then the entire community of Israel will slaughter their lambs together at twilight. They are to take some of the blood and smear it across the top and down the two sides of the door frame of the houses where they plan to eat it. That night, they should roast the lamb over a fire and feast on it along with bitter herbs and bread made without yeast. Do not eat the meat raw or boil it in water, only roast it after the entire animal has been roasted over fire with its head, legs, and intestines attached.
Like a campfire
spit.
This
is a campfire thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, too, in one of the commentaries that I was reading, it said, keep the lamb in the house with you. Don't even let it outside until you prepare to slaughter it. Eat whatever you can, but don't leave any of it until morning. Whatever is left over in the morning, burn it in the fire. Here is how I want you to eat this meal. Then he gets into specifics of what this is going to look like for you. And this is the tradition that they followed here on after.
Yeah.
Be sure you are dressed and ready to go at a moment's notice. With sandals on your feet and a walking stick in your hand, eat quickly, because this is my Passover. I'm going to pass through the land of Egypt during the night and put to death all of the firstborn children and animals. I will also execute my judgments against all the gods of the Egyptians, for I am the Eternal One. The blood on the door frames of your houses will be a sign of where you are. When I pass by and see the blood, I will pass over you. This plague will not afflict you when I strike the land of Egypt with death. You will remember this day always. I want you and all generations after you to commemorate this day with a festival to me. Celebrate this feast as a perpetual ordinance, a permanent part of your life together. So he talks about this meal and how you have to be prepared to leave at a moment's notice.
These are instructions that Moses is giving the people before it happens the very first time. Mm-hmm. Something really significant for me in this, he says, don't leave anything to waste. Mm-hmm. At the end of this meal, there was to be nothing left over. It was mm-hmm. to be a burnt sacrifice.
Right.
We haven't set up the tabernacle yet. We haven't set up the temple. This is all before the rest of the traditions mm-hmm. on how temple sacrifice should happen. Mm-hmm. This is a quick and dirty scribble, basically, on what worship is going to be like for thousands of years going forward. Mm-hmm. They just knew it as being something that was new.
This is a new covenant for them at this point.
And this is also God's answer to the king of Egypt, who had threatened to kill off every male child. In fact, he had been killing mm-hmm. male children. There was a thing going on right then that God mm-hmm. was addressing, and that was the existential threat against his people. And the only way out of it, when an angel of death passed over the entire land, was that an acceptable sacrifice of blood would be made, and that the angel of death itself would respect those who put the mark of blood on their doorposts. Mm-hmm. And that was how the Passover was handled. There are only two Passovers like this in the history of mankind. That first Passover, and the one that Jesus leads to the cross. Mm-hmm. Because in both situations, blood will be spilt that is innocent, and there was no way of getting out of it. The universe was at stake on that Passover where Jesus was ready to lay himself down as the last and official sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Think about it this way, honey. The doorpost, the lintel, the cross members that matter to us across centuries is not so much the lambs and their blood on doorposts in Egypt. It is absolutely the blood that was painted across the cross.
Mm, the doorpost of our future.
Of everything. So when Jesus steps into the Seder that's going to lead up to the sacrifice, he knows that he's going to become the lamb that takes away the sins of the world. But in the middle of all that, he says, a new command I give to you. Mm-hmm. I know we don't have a lot of time to go into how different it is than the previous commands. I do want to jump right back into John, because that's the book we've been focusing on for the past few months. We're going to keep doing it for months to come. But we'll jump forward in the narrative to chapter 13. And since we've been using the Dynamic Gospel book and it's our premium for this series, I thought I'd have you read the story of that Passover from that translation.
John chapter 13. More than a feast was at hand this Passover. Jesus knew in the core of his being that his hour had come. The journey home to his Father was about to begin. As much as he longed for it, he loved his own just as much and was soon to give the full measure of devotion for them. The formal dinner had barely been completed when the evil seed in the heart of Judas burst into full flower. The man was determined to force a showdown by handing Jesus over to the authorities, and forevermore would the name of Judas be a disgrace to the house of his fathers. The strains of this vicious fugue were playing in the heart of Jesus. Everything, good and bad, that could possibly happen to mankind weighed on him heavily. The Father was giving it to him to judge. He now had to choose how to deal with it. Soon he would have to present the results to his Father face to face. So Jesus rose from the table, removed his cloak and tunic, setting aside the garments of his authority. He picked up the rags of the servant and wrapped them around himself. The students watched in shock as Jesus picked up the ceremonially unclean wash basin and filled it with water. He carried it to the first of his disciples and knelt to wash his feet, wiping them dry with the towel wrapped around his waist. He continued down the line while the men sat in stunned silence. As Jesus approached Simon Peter, he couldn't bear it anymore, saying, "Master, what on earth are you doing? You're going to cringe at the feet of your own student, dirtying yourself?" Jesus answered patiently, "Peter, I know it doesn't make sense right now, but believe me, this is something you will desperately need to remember later on. You'll understand when it's time." Peter, overwhelmed by the moment, shook his head violently. "No, no! The master never washes the feet of the student, and you'll never wash mine." "Peter," Jesus answered firmly, "if you refuse, then we're through. You'll be on the outside from now on." Well, that shook Peter up. "Lord, I'm sorry. If you want to wash me, then do it all. I'm ready for a shower." Jesus laughed, "Peter, Peter, this isn't a game of one-upsmanship. This is to make you clean according to the law. Clean feet are enough for the purpose at hand." Jesus finished and looked up at the group. "There, Peter, you're clean. Yet not all of you are clean or ever will be." Jesus knew full well who was going to betray him and called it like it was. Those were words of final judgment. You are not all clean. Jesus continued this same humbling act of service till each disciple was honored. He dressed and returned to his place at the table, saying, "Do you have any inkling what this means? What I've done to you? You shout in the streets, 'Here comes the great teacher and master,' and that's fine. I have come to lead the way. So if I demonstrate this humble and menial chore, washing your feet, what does it mean? Simply this: follow my example. Literally. This isn't a suggestion. Show your love for me by serving each other, even if it's humiliating. If that means scraping the mud from between each other's toes, so be it. Ponder this and think hard about it. The slave is never greater than his master. Neither is the ambassador ever greater than the king who sends him out. This is knowledge that can transform you. It will bring you much joy if you put it into practice." Jumping forward to verse 33. "Oh, my dear ones, my time here among you is so short. I know you'll desperately search for me, hoping to follow. But as I told the religious leaders where I'm going, you cannot go right now. It's difficult to hear, but it's the truth. But one thing before I go, a command. Do this and keep at it. Love each other with the same passion you've seen me love you. What you see me do, do for each other. Do that, and the world won't be able to tell us apart. If you love each other unyieldingly, the mantle will have rightfully passed to you."
A new commandment I give to you, not just to feel affection for each other. The kind of love Jesus talks about is the love that gets on the floor and scrapes the feet of a dirty friend or even stranger. That's the real love he's talking about, and he did it.
Yeah.
That's the last and most important Passover, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
The rest of ours, from that point forward, are memorials to the one Seder that ends it all.
Yeah.
So we're not having Passovers hoping for the covering. We are having Passovers and the Lord's Supper as memorials to the one that really, truly settled the score with the devil.
It seems like Jesus one-upped the previous Passovers
as
well with the washing of the feet.
Absolutely.
And I think that is a beautiful sign of rest because the original Passover, they had to wear their shoes, their cloak, be ready to go at a moment's notice. Yeah. And this was Jesus saying,
"It's undoing all of
no,
that.
No, let's rest. Let's sit here and rest and enjoy and just serve each other." And one thing that's always struck me about this whole scene is that Jesus, knowing who would betray him, still washed his feet. And the feet of Judas were cleansed ritually before he walked out into the street to betray the Son of God.
And he literally went to the temple,
ritually
clean by God himself, to do the thing he was going to do. I don't get that paradox, but somehow it all fits together. And Jesus did it the way he did, and we need to respect that. So, today is the new commandment day, Maundy Thursday. And that love command to me is the one I want to camp on and pray through today. I hope you do too, friends.
Loving others the way Jesus loved his enemies is the cornerstone of the gospel.
Before we go back to the program today, I just want to remind you that Compassion Radio is a communications ministry, and it depends on the faithful support of you to keep bringing inspiring stories to the air each day. Our vision partners support us monthly with gifts large and small and make it possible for us to take you to the very front lines of faith. Whether you join our vision team or make a one-time gift, thank you for believing in and standing by this ministry. We have a very special thank you for your generous support to keep this ministry on the air and in the field. It's a fresh take on that amazing story of the life of Jesus written by the Apostle John. We're calling it the Dynamic Gospel for a lot of reasons, and I'd love to send you one if you ask for it. Just let us know when you contact us today with your gift. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478. You can also text the word COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone, or visit our website, CompassionRadio.com. Thank you, friends, for everything you've done and what you'll do today. We love you. And now back to today's program. Honey, in this section of the program, we're going to do something different. We've talked about how Jesus walked through the Passover. We also know that it's a story that was at the end of a lifetime of learning who he was and what the meanings of all these symbols and histories and relationships and ancestries are for him.
Mm-hmm.
I have a story I wanted to share. It's available on our website, and we'll have a link on today's program podcast page. What if we could go back with Jesus when he was a young man, discovering what it meant to be born where he was, become what he would become, and to be what he would need to be so that we could join him in heaven?
That's a fascinating thought.
The Cave, a Passover story. Yeshua introduced himself to the blacksmith and asked permission to look around a bit. Upon hearing the boy's name, the old metalworker considered what the word meant. God saves, huh? Well, he can save us from the prefect, then. Oh, please, go right ahead. Look around all you want. You won't find much after Rufus's goons made off with everything. And I'll be gone all day working off this tax bill. The grizzled man pulled a few Tiberius coins from a pouch behind his belt, spalled and speckled with burns from countless hours behind the anvil. Before he handed them over to the deliveryman, he faked a sneeze. Yeshua clearly saw him spit on the image of the emperor. The teen handed over the reins to the rented cart and mule, even helped to load some of the beastly heavy boxes into the bed. The load of spikes, nails, and shoes clanged loudly as they landed, as much from the anger of the blacksmith as the shifting bed of the cart. The mule began to protest. Yeshua inspected the contents of the boxes. Roman iron shaped into Roman spikes. Roman nails. Shoes for Roman horses. He imagined the sparks flying up from the cobbles of Jerusalem as those chargers flew through the streets imposing Roman authority. He knew what the spikes were for. Those Roman slaves never know how to get up a proper fire, said the blacksmith as he mounted the cart. It'll probably take me twice as long to get the shoes shaped. I'll be lucky to get back tomorrow sometime. Make sure the bar is set tight and leave by the back door that goes through the inn's kitchen. Are you staying there this week?
No, sir. We arrived a bit early for the Passover, so we're just visiting old friends here and in Bethany tomorrow before our rooms are ready in town.
Well, good luck to you then. If the soldiers come back for anything, play dumb.
The blacksmith sent the mule into motion with an angry flick of his powerful wrist.
Yeshua spent a few minutes studying the tools in the shop. Heavy hammers, some flat-faced, others tapered or rounded. Long-handled tongs and pliers to lift or hold red-hot metal while it was pounded. Hooks to hang cooling objects. 3 different anvils of various sizes, all far heavier than the boy could imagine lifting himself. He saw one spike driven into a scrap section of beam. The lopsided, rounded head stood about a flat hand's distance from the rough wood. He laid his hand on the cool metal. He slid his hand under the edge of the spike, imagining what the condemned prisoners went through once that spike was set. What was it like knowing your hand would never leave that beam alive? How had this blacksmith ended up having to provide these tools of death to the Romans? He knew they weren't used for anything else anymore. The specifications were exact. Painful, political death was now a science for these occupiers. He remembered how spies would leave one of these very spikes at the doorstep of agitators to warn them. How the blood would run out of their faces and how their families would run out of town in the middle of the night. Some made it out alive. Others didn't. The boy felt the invisible ice work up his own spine. He stepped away from the spike and turned away. He wasn't here for spooky stories. Yeshua locked the barn doors, stepped through the kitchen entrance of the inn, and out the side door back into the bright spring sunshine. He walked around the mound where the shop sat to the cave in the boulder below, facing to the east. The pen around the entrance his mother had told him about was broken down now. His eyes adjusted to the dim of the cave, and he looked around for the dry spot in the left corner. To his right
was the damp seep that collected in a stone bowl in the rock. It trickled from there into a rivulet that left the cave for a pile of rocks and a patch of lush grass farther down the slope. Even now, a ewe and her lambs munched on that grass. They were unkempt and dirty. Yeshua couldn't imagine David letting his own lambs degrade into such a condition. He wondered if he should groom them. He wasn't too concerned about being thought a thief if he tried, but he let it pass for the moment. A kind of sorrow was tumbling around in his heart over the sight of those sheep. "There are so many like them," he said out loud. Yeshua stepped over to the place where the manger would have stood. He had to stoop a little for his recent growth spurt. He imagined his parents cramped into this space trying to keep warm, trying to keep him warm. He found a crate with the unmistakable import stamp of Annius Rufus. That harsh prefect had standardized crucifixion. He lifted the loose lid. Sure enough, it was filled with iron blanks for those Roman spikes. Yeshua sank to the cold stone and buried his head between his knees. How could his place of birth become such a storehouse of death? He couldn't control himself. He sobbed. Slowly, the sounds of other deaths, ghosts from the past, began to fill his ears. Roman swords flashing, stabbing, little boys like himself dying. Every window in Bethlehem pouring forth the wails of inconsolable mothers. And then it suddenly snapped together in his mind. Those Romans were after him. He understood the reason for the sudden move to Egypt, the many years when Bethlehem was never mentioned, the non-answers to his questions about his early years, the strange outbursts of tears and laughter last month from both his parents when they learned that old friends and their son were still alive and still living in Bethlehem. The new plans this year to visit them before Passover, if they could get on the road from Nazareth soon enough. The revelation was too much. "Please, Father, if you can take away the sorrow, please do." Then he remembered to pray what his other father and his mother had always reminded him to do. "But Father, do what you want, not what I want." Even as he remained buried in his own tunic, he felt the scene shift. He felt the ghost of another sitting next to him, tense, alert, athletic. The murmuring sounds of a large herd suddenly changed to panic as a snarl came from the darkness. The ghost beside him sprung into action. Yeshua could see and feel him shoot like an arrow at the beast as it snatched the lamb. The covering was upon this man as he gouged at eyes and throttled the lion with his bare hands. Confused, the cat rolled over and over as the protector crushed his throat. The large cat vanquished. Bloodied and exhausted, the shepherd carried up the attacked lamb to the cave and carefully laid it on the floor. Yeshua raised his head in amazement as this ghost of David inspected the wounds of the lamb, ignoring his own. Pierced on all four legs, it struggled to rise. David whispered comfort. The lamb sank back down, softly bleated back to David, and breathed its last. Yeshua was frozen in the horrid awe of the scene. Blood trickled down the lamb's brow from where the teeth had pierced its scalp. And the ghost of David wept. His prayers begged the Father to take him, not this lamb. Yeshua wept again. The scene eventually evaporated in the warming breeze of the noon hour. Yeshua rose from his spot and left the cave for the last time. I must protect my lambs. He walked down the hill to the ewe and the lambs he saw earlier and called to them. They seemed to know him and came over without hesitation. He spent the afternoon grooming them, then went to look for their owner. Once he knew they were safe, he rejoined his parents and their hosts at their humble home for supper. Tomorrow would be a busy day with his cousins in Bethany. He looked forward to exploring with Lazarus and his sisters. There is so much to be thankful for, even in hard times. Right now, I'm very thankful for you. However you reach out, know that we're in this ministry and this work for you and because of you. Just call or write us today to help keep us on the air and in the field. 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And jump in anytime at CompassionRadio.com. We're waiting for you, friends. Hop on board.